So, good afternoon, everyone. It's great to be here again after 10 months, actually. And first thing I want to say today, apologies if my English is not that good. Now, you would understand that I spent the last 10 months in Scotland, so not probably a English-speaking country. Or I'm married to a Scotland and I know what it means to not speak English. Or as they call it, Bonnie Scotland. Now, it's not been long since I left, as I said. It's been 10 months and there has been many things going on. But I still remember the things I used to do when I was here. Now, I'm not talking about the work I used to do or the tasks that I used to do, but I'm more talking about habits. For example, one of the things that just naturally happened right now was to look at the sound desk and waiting for them to give me the okay sign. And I know that a couple of weeks ago, Ash also told you about my signature greeting when I arrive and when I leave, which is beeping the horn. Now, I must say that I was very tempted to do the same thing when I arrived on Friday night, but I said probably it's better not to wake the neighborhood up, so I didn't want them to know that I was there. But in a sense, all of us do things in a certain way. All of us have habits, and it's just ourselves who can explain the way we do things, why we do them, and also the things themselves, what we do. But you know that if someone is looking at you from outside, they're asking, why? Why is he doing that thing? Why is he doing that thing? Why is she doing that thing? And I know someone that first thing when he walks in his kitchen, first thing he does is to turn the kettle on. Now, I don't want to say who this person is, but I know that he's a pastor somewhere in Escape, Yorkshire. But you probably you can say, oh, he's an Englishman, he's normal, he just loves his tea, and it's something very normal to do here. And in fact, I must say that in my time here in Yorkshire particularly, I've learned that a cuppa is more than a habit. It's more like a daily tradition. It's something sacred. Everyone does it. And the first question today is, have you ever thought about the fact that traditions or customs are just corporate habits? That is a fancy word, corporate habits. Something that everyone does for some reason. Now, looking into the passage that Dave just read a couple of minutes ago, we have a glimpse of what Jesus' habits were as a Jew. In verse 16 and 17, we read this, that he went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Was his custom. So he stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Now, I would say that when we read this passage, especially when we are reading through the gospel, probably this detail doesn't really stand out. And probably if you are familiar with the church life, and if you've been around church for a long time, you know what does it mean to go into a gathering of people who is there to worship, to pray, to hear. But probably if you are not familiar with church, you are probably thinking, what's going on? Why this guy is handed over a scroll? Now, the reason for that is that Jesus was there to teach. And the funny thing is that these people knew Jesus since he was little. Every time I go back home in my home village in Italy, Vietri di Potenza, 2,000 inhabitants, everyone knows each other. Everyone knows me for being my parents' child. And this is an interesting detail, that these people who knew Jesus since he was a child are now about to be taught by Jesus. And he has been handed over this scroll of Isaiah. And fun fact, let me tell you a fun fact, right? In 1946, there was a huge discovery in Israel. I don't know if you're familiar with it, the Dead Sea Scrolls. Very important discovery. And the Dead Sea Scrolls are a collection of many scrolls, Hebrew scrolls, like religious scrolls, dated around 100 BC. And among those scrolls, there was also an intact copy of the scroll of the prophet of Isaiah. And can you guess how long this scroll was? It was 734 centimeters. Now, I understand you, we are in Britain, so we don't use that sort of meters, but we say 24 feet long. So these types of scroll were quite long, so probably from here to over there, to the sound desk. And the idea is that they were rolled on both sides. Rolled from and on both sides, sorry. And Jesus is looking for a specific passage in this scroll of Isaiah. And the way Luke tells this story is quite meticulous, it's very precise, and I want you to see that. In a sense, he wants the reader, who probably is not very used to Jewish custom, to understand what's going on. And he wants to explain what Jesus' habits are and why is he doing what is he doing. And so we read that in verse 17, he stands up, and he is given this 24 feet long scroll, and he is looking for this passage. But what's even more interesting than that? So people that they knew, like Jesus was known to be the young boy he was about to teach. What's more interesting than that is that the passage he is looking for is very, very important to all those people who are listening. In fact, I was doing some research about Isaiah, who Isaiah is for the Jewish culture, and there's this common idea that Isaiah, among other prophets, those people were speaking before Jesus was born to the people of Israel, Isaiah is one of the most important because he speaks a lot about the hope for Israel, which is the Messiah, this figure that they were waiting for. A scholar would say this, that Isaiah towers among all the other prophets. And this is because he speaks a lot about their hope. Now, as I said before, in the past few months, I've been involved a lot with the literature distribution. I've been preparing boxes, I've been preparing parcels, padded envelopes, working with the Royal Mails, trying to figure out things. Sometimes it doesn't work, I must say. And some of these parcels don't always cross the UK borders, while others always sail to the furthest part of the world. And every time I prepare a delivery, I try to pack the box in a very careful way. I try to make sure that everything is very stable, so that when the idea is that I know, I'm sure that someone down the posting line is having a bad day, probably has argued with his wife or husband, and I know that they are not going to care about a stupid box prepared by some sort of weird Italian for someone on the other side of the world. So I know that they are not going to hand a parcel safely or carefully. And in fact, sometimes when I receive this proof of postage, or actually I should call them proof of survival, this parcel that I know I prepared, the picture I got is this parcel with more tape than the one I've put there. So there's some extra tape there, and I didn't put there, yes, that's the thing. So can you see where I'm going? I think when Jesus is handed over this passage, the scroll of Isaiah, he's not simply dealing with a passage. He's dealing with much more than that. He's dealing with hope. He's dealing with trust. He's dealing with history. He's dealing with culture of an entire nation. And in fact, to have an idea of what the people's reaction to the passage, we have to go in verse 20. Because in verse 20, people were quite... they were quite, let's say, careful about what Jesus was about to say. In fact, we read this, that when Jesus rolled up the scrolls and gave it back to the attendant and then sat down, look at this, the eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And this is, I think, you can feel the tension here. These people are probably thinking, oh, mamma mia, what is going to say? And this is what I mean when I said that Luke is very meticulous in telling us this story. He pulls you in the moment, and he wants you to feel the tension that these people are feeling. And what is the message that Jesus is about to speak from? What is this verses, these important ideas that people hold with so much care and love? In verse 18 and 19, we read that this passage from Isaiah that we can still find today in our Bibles in the Old Testament. And these are the verses from Isaiah 61, and verses 1 and 2. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim the good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. So can you see what are the characteristics of this Messiah that people are waiting for? He has to be anointed by God in the first place, and his message is a message of richness, freedom, healing, justice. And I want you to think about this. Imagine entrusting your dearest thing, the things that you most hold dear, and you have to hand this thing to someone who you know that is not going to do a good job with it. And you say, yeah, I'll trust you, but probably inside of you, and this brings out the Italian inner being that everyone has, you say, mamma mia, this is not going to end well. And for the people who were there, what was happening is kind of the exact same thing. They knew that what Jesus was handling was something very precious to them, and that probably that was not going to end well. And that happens for a few reasons. The first reason is that in that passage there is the name of God, which for Jewish people is very important. It's so much holy that even when they write it down today, they do not spell it totally, or they will not write it completely. They will do G score D because it's so holy, and they are not worthy of pronouncing it. And the second one is because it speaks about the year of the Lord's favor. The year of the Lord's favor is an event knitted in the very heart of the Jewish culture, because it's indicated by God in the law prescribed to Moses. To think about the importance of this year of the Lord's favor, think about this, that during the year of the Lord's favor, and I'm quoting a commentator, unpaid debts were to be forgiven. Property was to be returned to the original owners, and even slaves, were to be set free. And then, if the first reason is the mention of God and the second reason is the mention of the year of the Lord's favor, the third is that this passage speaks about God being the sender of a message and the messenger himself, the Messiah. So can you see how important this passage is to the people of Israel? And yet, I want you to notice this. Look how Jesus deals with such an enormous passage in verse 21. And I have to say that this is also a message for the speakers of Christ Church Escape, right? Jesus has such a long passage, an important passage, and yet his preaching is nothing more than 30 seconds. So if your speakers go for more than 30 seconds, you can call them out, say, that's no ideal. No, I'm joking. But the things, and I want you to see how Jesus deals with it. Jesus says this, today, in verse 21, he says, today this scripture is fulfilled in your very hearing. Now, these are just a few words, 30 seconds preaching, but which contains a lot. In few words, Jesus was saying, have you looked at all these things that the Messiah has to do? Have you looked at all the characteristics that the Messiah needs to have? Well, that Messiah is me. Me who is speaking right now. Jesus is saying, not me. And look at the reaction of the people, verse 22. These people who have been knowing Jesus since he was a child, look at what he's saying. He's saying, how dare he? Isn't he Joseph's son? What is he talking about? Or if we would be in Scotland, they would say, what is he talking about? Something like that. And in fact, the following verse is this. Jesus quotes a proverb. He says, surely you will tell me, physician, heal yourself, which basically means prove to me what you are claiming. But if we want to put it in even today's words, what the people are asking is simply, can I trust Jesus? Can I trust this person who is claiming to be the Messiah? And Jesus does an interesting thing here. Jesus quotes two stories in verses 24 and to 27. He quotes two stories that are very important for the people of Israel because he speaks about two people who are not part of the Jewish culture, who are yet being blessed by the Jewish God, but they were considered by the Jewish as outcasts. They did not deserve God, never mind his blessings. And Jesus is basically saying, look, this Messiah that you are looking for is not just for you. It's not just a traditional thing. This Messiah is for everyone, is for everybody. And the question for us today is, in fact, can we trust Jesus? Or should I trust Jesus? Why should I trust Jesus? When we look at the message that Jesus spoke in the synagogue, he said it was a preaching that, though was very short, he was speaking about hope, freedom, and healing. But there is something very ironic about this passage, because we know the story of Jesus, right? Most of us, I think Jesus is the most well-known person in the world, and we know what's happened to him. People at that moment when Jesus quoted these two stories of the Jewish culture, people were trying to kill him. In verse 28, 29, we read that the people drove him out of town and took him out to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. They were trying to kill him. But they didn't succeed in that moment. And yet, a few years later, down the line, they crucified him. And in fact, even for us today, when we speak about can we trust Jesus, is he really the Messiah that he's talking about, the bringer or the carrier of peace, the carrier of freedom, the carrier of justice? Because every time we look outside, I think if you turn the news on today or in the last period of time, all that you see is war, oppression, injustice. But I want you to look at this, Isaiah 53, verses 4 to 5, because this is an interesting passage. In the same scroll that Jesus read in the synagogue, the same prophet, the same spiritual guide for Israel, 600 years before Jesus was born, he predicted this. He said this, Isaiah, that the Messiah took up our pain and bore our suffering. And yet we consider him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds we are healed. I think oppression, injustice, illnesses, hopelessness, they all have the root in the same problems, which is sin. A sin is a little bit like tradition, it's a little bit like habits, because sin is a habit when it comes to personal sin, when it doesn't affect anybody else. It's something small. But then when it becomes corporate, like tradition, it just takes the shape of war, oppression, injustice. And sin has a cost. But praise God, that cost has been paid by Jesus, the preacher who broke through the tradition and said, look, this Messiah that you are waiting for is me. And this Messiah that you are waiting for to bring peace, justice, hope, and freedom has to suffer in order to bring you those things that you are waiting for. He is the Messiah that is claiming to be. And I don't know where you're at in your life. And this is probably how does this passage speak to us today. I don't know where are you at in your life. But I do know that no one else can heal your wound. Not even mine. And no one can promise an eternity of peace but God. There is another commentator that I've been reading when preparing about this preaching that says this. Isaiah was not capable of binding up the broken hearts of the world, nor is any man. Only God himself could do that. And through his death and resurrection, the King Messiah, Jesus, has done and continues to do that very thing for all who trust in him. This is the first way in which this passage speaks to us today. Only Jesus, only God can heal us, can heal your wounds. Only God can bring freedom, justice, hope. The second one, and I have to be honest about it, is that the way I presented this passage today is not very in-depth. It's actually, I want to give you a reading, probably my reading, the reading that God has put in my heart today. But there is so much more that can be found in this passage. And I think that digging deeper in the knowledge of God and the promises for us today is very, very valuable. And we can learn a lot from this man who claimed to be the Messiah. And the third one is hope. When reading the passage from the scroll, Jesus stopped halfway through. The second part of that verse from Isaiah 61, 1 and 2 speaks of the Messiah coming and bringing justice, not only on a personal level, like his first coming, but on an entire level, on a world level. And more than that, he will come to comfort those who mourn. So, to summarize this message in a few words, I said this. Jesus' message broke through the habits and tradition of an entire nation and definitely can break through your life and my life, because it gets beyond the need of the world. Since his message of freedom, peace, and forgiveness is for every single person in every time and space who decides to trust in him. Amen.